When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, South Kakalaka! Don't you dare be sour! Clap for your world-famous two-time champs and feel the power! It's a new day, yes it is!
For 12-Pack Radio, get excited, y'all!
Welcome back, everyone, to 12-Pack Radio, your podcast host for Pac-12 football news in the home of the Beta Rank College Football Statistical Model. This is a Sharp College Football Podcast. Thank you for joining us. This is Brian Conger, and we have a champion. We have a champion of the world, the Utah Utes. Congratulations, winning the 2022 Pac-12 Championship. Just rolling and smoking the defense from USC. And yes, again, Caleb Williams got hurt. We'll get into that. We also have coaching changes. We have Coach Prime at Colorado, Kenny Dillingham at ASU. We're getting offensive and defensive coordinators into the system. And to join me to break everything down is Mr. Rob Barron from Sharp College Football. What's going on, Rob?
I'm excited to be here. We made it to the end of the regular season. Like, congrats to us.
It's like this one seemed particularly long. I don't know if it's because, like, the World Cup, like, was kind of happening at the same time and college basketball, but it just seemed it almost, maybe it's just because this is, like, the first year where I just didn't have my finger on the pulse of the conference, like, just straight up outright the whole year. I mean, like, I ended up still over 500, but, like, barely. And I don't know. It struck me as a weird year. And this Pac-12 championship was kind of like a nice, you know, a perfect example of the conference this year, where I don't even think Utah fans thought this Utah team was all that good. If Rising were healthy, right? If they had the two tight ends, all that considered. But I think Utah fans kind of saw what this team was, and which is a well coached, good team, but not one of like the all time Utah teams. And it didn't matter. I mean, like, now Williams got hurt, but they got to Williams. And we were going to open with Coach Prime. Let's just open with the championship game, because it was super fun. It was super weird at the same time.
Well, I mean, the whole game changed. I mean, Williams appeared to get hurt on his, that's like long run that he was on, you know, and his knee just didn't appear to be the same afterwards. But after that, I mean, like, to your point, like, we knew they were going to have to blitz to be able to get pressure on Williams. Their defensive line has not been good all season. And USC's offensive line isn't great. And if you don't have Williams' ability to scramble, like, they were dead in the water.
It looked like he couldn't plant. I mean, he was missing regular throws. Yeah, I was talking to my dad about this because, you know, I think sometimes we look at the NFL and we look at, like, the first scrambling quarterbacks, and they were fast and they were pretty good throwers. Like, Williams is fast and an excellent thrower. Like, the way that he's able to scramble out of trouble and throw that ball into such a tight window, I mean, it makes USC's offense look so easy. And I think it was like 17-3 when he got hurt. And it really did change. And we should mention, like, on the other side of the coin, Cam Rising wasn't 100% in this game either.
Yeah.
And that clearly hampered Utah's offense all year. I mean, you know, not all year, but like in the second half of the year. It made the Oregon game a bummer. It made this game not a bummer. They still threw 40 points. But 40 points. I mean, like, they made USC's tackling. Oh my gosh! It looked like Arizona under like Kevin Sumlin. Like, I was laughing out loud in the middle of it as this clown car of a defensive secondary was just trying to run around and tackle people. I mean, clearly Williams is the story of the game, because that offense really was humming. And you go up 17-3 on Utah, and if USC is still able to move the ball, that game's over. And it wasn't because he wasn't able to really move around. And it's funny because, like, USC's wide receivers started looking like Utah's wide receivers, and Utah's wide receivers started looking like USC's wide receivers. It was super crazy.
I feel like it's really important to like remember, like, USC has largely had to outscore opponents all season, right? Like, the defense, Utah didn't do anything spectacular or different to this defense that has not already been done. Like, Cal put a lick on this. I mean, like, this defense has had some horrendous moments so far this season. It's been less of a focus because, like, at the same time, USC's offense has been largely up to the task, right? And able to go out there and put up enough points to win the game. And then, you know, people can sort of feel good and be like, oh, you know, like, the defense got some turnovers, you know, like that kind of thing. But Utah's offense is competent. I mean, to your point, like, without Rising being 100%, without Keithy, they were more limited than you would have expected. But they went out and, you know, put a hurting on a very, very bad USC defense. And then USC without, I think if you're like, and it feels like everyone should remember this because it was only a week ago, but like, I also think a lot of people only watch their team sometimes. You know, like Williams versus Notre Dame, like, he scrambled all around. I mean, he just kept scrambling in that game and buying time and then throwing the big pass. And he also added a lot with his legs. Like, in this game, I think he's such a weapon, and Utah's pass rush is limited. If he would have been able to go, I think it would have been like the game in Salt Lake City, down to the wire. You know, like, to your point, like, it wasn't just that he couldn't scramble. It did feel like he couldn't really plant, and he was missing throws that he would normally hit. And that's a big problem, I think, for USC. And USC doesn't have, I mean, the transfers out, they had no really good options. Like, Miller Moss is not going to get in there and, like, help you survive a Pac-12 championship game.
It was funny. My dad was watching the game, and he goes, "Who's that linebacker for USC? He's awful. He's so slow." And that's kind of like, you know, the SC defense, you know, has just been cut and pasted together, and it hasn't been great all year. The one thing is, like, you know, we open with Williams because that's the biggest part of this game. But I would still say, even if Williams was healthy, I mean, Utah almost dropped a 50 burger on this defense. And they did it largely without Dalton Kincaid. You know, like, the last game, right? One of the things, the reason I had picked USC is because I didn't think, even with the bad secondary and even with the bad defense, that Utah's wide receivers were going to step up. And they did. I mean, like, and yeah, you had a lot out of the Syracuse transfer, the tight end there, but like, Money Parks and Dixon and, like, even Bernard was able to get yardage, and there were some really big passes and big plays that they were able to step up and you add that to the fact that, like, they just made Jaquindon Jackson a straight up running back, even though that guy looks like LeBron James in terms of his size. That's a big dude. And him back there lining up, it almost reminds me of not the same. I don't know if you watched San Diego State this year, but their new quarterback.
Yeah.
He's like 6'6", 250. I mean, Jackson isn't that big, but he's a big dude, and he was able to get his 100 yards. He's able to be a threat on the ground for Utah. And look, like, I wish both teams could play fully healthy, because you get a healthy Cam Rising and a healthy Caleb Williams, and it shows off the talent that's and the creativity at the quarterback position that's in here. But that was kind of it was what it was. And the one thing I do want to also highlight for Utah is I know that SC's offense was limited, but by the time that game really was starting to flip, I think Utah's defense just gave no, like, they're like, you aren't scoring on us, basically. And they gave up a couple plays.
But I mean, let's be frank, like, Utah's defense, this isn't one of their vintage defenses. This is one of their worst defenses they've had in years. And it's not that it's a bad defense. By Pac-12 standards, it's a pretty good defense. But, like, without Williams' ability to scramble, I mean, like, yeah, like, they were able to lock him down. But, like, we've seen a few wind-aided performances for this Utah defense. Like, Bo Nix is an example. Like, he also couldn't plant and throw. You know? Like, they're good. They're just not, like, they're not a great defense. You know? And, like, and they may have gotten lucky again. Like, they're going to get a Penn State offense that's not great in the bowl game. You know? But, I like, They did not, like, I think the biggest factor in, like, USC not scoring has less to do with Utah's defense than everything to do with Williams.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, but I do think that they were, like, Austin Jones did nothing. And, you know, when you can stack the box, when you know Williams can't throw the ball, like, that makes a difference. But right. One of the things that we had talked about possibly was that Troy Dye not being in the game. I don't think Austin Jones is nearly as good as Dye. And I mean, he went 15 for 35.
Like, no, and I try to tell people, like, because, like, so people, if they look at the EPA based stats on, like, the run pass splits, like, those are just wrong. Like, and one of the things that all season as people have talked about, if they look at those, is like Utah has bad run defense, but they don't. Utah has a really good run defense. And you see that in beta rank. What Utah has struggled with is defending the pass, because they do have Clark Phillips and he's fantastic, but they don't have a very good pass rush. And so, like, if you can, you know, if you have a little time, guys are going to get open. I mean, that was like USC in the first game, like, threw the ball all over Utah. You know, so, like, yes, like, USC was in deep trouble when Williams got hurt, and Utah's defense did. Like, they and I don't want to say, like, they're not a vintage Utah defense, but they're excellent against the run.
Yeah. The most Pac-12, you know, final to a year as like that's what this conference deserves is basically this game where, you know, we knock a team out of the college football playoff. And I was really bummed because I wanted to fade the hell out of the Trojans against Georgia.
Yeah.
Like they would have gotten, like, if you're a USC fan watching this game, like, your team would have gotten rolled and smoked against Georgia. Like, it would have been disgusting because this defense isn't all that good. And when you have a real good defense on the other side, I mean, like, Look at what happened with that Oregon State game. I think it was a good example of, like, and Oregon State isn't even that great of a defense, but they were able to limit this offense. But with that said, 11-2, going from Clay Helton to Lincoln Riley and what he was able to do to make this team one game away from the college football playoff. I mean, that's impressive. And, you know, Caleb Williams is coming back, which is just bonkers. And now in kind of this era of, hey, like, let's just pay a bunch of people to come here, I'm curious to see if the defense gets any better. And I know that the personnel here was not great, but, like, Alex Grinch, it's been a hot minute since he's had a good defense.
I know. So he wasn't great in Oklahoma. And it's been a while. I mean, like, his best years where he was at DC were, you know, at Washington State. And he's really got to get it going this next season. Otherwise, like, there's just no excuse, and I doubt he'll be back. But yeah, they do have, like, they did USC's defense did have significant personnel issues. They were not able to solve those through the transfer portal. And to be honest, like, I mean, I'm interested to see this year because I think you see more players going into the portal, but at least now, like, testing the waters. But, like, I'm not sure you can really rebuild your defense through the portal. Like, I just think it's tough. Like, even USC last season, who in theory had a bunch of money and could have thrown money at the problem, like, there aren't A-plus guys to go and get out there. You know, UCLA also brought in a bunch of guys in the portal, and their defense was bad.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you know, congratulations to Utah. Like, they've just, right? I mean, the trajectory of this program over the time when they were in the Mountain West to come into the conference, to be consistent, and then to take the leap and now to be competing for championships. I mean, again, just to reiterate the point, they won the conference with an injured Cam Rising most of the year, with Brant Keithy out, and with Kincaid out for some of these games.
And I mean, with Thomas, surprised, I mean, like, opting out.
Like, yeah.
Early. I mean, the one thing that I think really impresses me about this Utah team is they were really resilient in the face of, like, a lot of injuries with them, because, like, they don't have a bunch of talented guys that are, like, you know, that are, you know, at other positions that could just, like, fill in, right? Like, the wide receivers haven't been good for a long time. So if you get injuries to the tight ends, it's like, oh no, what's going to happen? Utah found a way to make it work. You know, they couldn't run the ball as well as they did last season. They've still found a way to make it work, you know. Even after, and, you know, really when you think of, like, the fact that the offensive line struggled and run blocking, You know, and they did pad some stats later on in the season against really bad defenses running the football. But like the fact that they were able to work around that, even with the injuries, I think is just speaks a lot to the coaching and this team sticking together.
The last like 3 years of this running back core is the most Utah thing ever. And it starts with Ty Jordan, who is amazing. Like, and I want to go back to before like his tragic death, because he like, right. Like we were kind of looking at all the running backs. We're like, oh, look at this thing. And it's Ty Jordan, right? It's the freshman that comes in, freaking lights the world on fire as like one of the most fun backs that I've seen as a freshman at Utah. Like he was so, so fun. And then of course he passes away, and they've done a great job just remembering him, which I appreciate. Like, right, they had the helmets this time. I think they had like a tribute again, or like they usually, that's awesome that they keep doing that. And then they have to fill a void, right? And so they end up getting, you know, a 4-star running back from LSU and a 4-star running back, I think, from Texas. And then if it's the 3-star Cincinnati running back transfer that ends up being the top guy. And you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then the next year, it's LaQuindon Jackson that ends up getting the yards. It's just, I find it impressive. It's kind of like, you know, we used to always shrug our shoulders about the linebacking core. It's kind of the same thing with the running back in the system. Like, and sometimes they don't have the greatest offensive line, and they still are just able to find these running backs to continuously be good at that position. And I forget the guy that left. He was the running back for the Bills, and they've had so many good backs. But when he left, it was kind of like, wow, that guy was awesome. Now what?
Moss.
Yeah. And like, because we thought maybe he was covering for some, and he was covering for like a bad line, I think, that year. But they've still been able just to be so productive at that position every year. I don't think Jackson is the answer for them. Frankly, I think it'll be somebody else next year, but we'll just keep a lookout for that. And, you know, again, a big congratulations to that Utah fan base. It's one of the best in the conference. And, Williams got hurt, but like they won, like they made that defense look stupid. And it was, I mean, I probably giggled like 4 times on the couch because it was just so ridiculous what was happening in that game. Anything else on the Pac-12 championship, Rob?
No. I mean, I would get, like, in some ways it was good that a team that's staying in the Pac-10 or 12, you know, won it. It is a little bit of a bummer because I think that the conference overall would have benefited from the playoff participation, even if USC got absolutely rolled by Georgia. But Utah winning, I think, is better for the conference in the long run. I think it was a great win for them.
Yeah, they would have lost to Michigan too, by the way. Like Michigan also would have bullied them around. So
yeah.
All right. Let's talk. Let's talk some transfer portal stuff, since we were talking a little bit about NIL, and then we'll get, of course, to Coach Prime. Let's cover that, and let's do it right after this.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're talking Pac-12. Look, we're talking transfers. I want to be very upfront about that. Like, until your team's star player enters the transfer portal, signs a deal with a team, and he's shaking the hand of the car dealership in, like, you know, West Lafayette, we're going to treat this just like we're treating recruiting. It's like, congratulations, you got a recruit. Congratulations, your recruit like left. Like, and you're lucky if we're going to do that. But
until they're signed, they don't exist.
Exactly.
Like, they are. That is That is funny money. That is imaginary money. You can't spend it yet. Like until they're signed somewhere, and until they're signed somewhere else in the transfer portal, it's funny money.
Yeah, we got places to go. We got people to see. We can't. We just can't do this. If you know, I'm sure there's some websites out there that are tracking all of this stuff. There's like 1,000 people in the transfer portal. It's a bizarre year because the. It's kind of like one of the real first years for NIL, and you have the COVID, you know, the people like, you know, Bud Elliott talks a lot about how like a lot of the coaches didn't get to see these players in person while they were recruiting for COVID. So there's a lot of weird fits, and we'll see like things will start settling. What we do want to highlight are players that matter and players that are interesting that are transferring. I think I want to start with Chance Nolan going into the transfer portal. And I think that's a good move for him because at Oregon State he was fine, but Gold Branson, like I don't know, like I watched a lot of Oregon State football. They're different players, but in terms of the production on the field, I couldn't tell a difference between the two. Rob, I think they were pretty similar, and Gold Branson's younger.
Right. I mean, the tie is going to go to the younger player for sure. Yeah. So I think that's the right call. Yeah. I mean, I would say like the Nolan entering is probably even a good sign for the Beavers, and like he won't be hanging over spring and potentially like taking up reps because I still do hope that they go out and get somebody in the transfer portal, but Gil Branson seems like he has some upside that the staff wants to work with too.
I saw a tweet about JT Daniels because he had visited Oregon State, and look, this is kind of wild Twitter speculation, but I'm curious about it because the tweet was about basically when Daniels was at Oregon State, he had asked for a house.
Yeah, so this was John Calzano who reported this.
Oh, so this is real.
This is real. Like his dad had managed the recruiting process, and he was looking for 6 figures in NIL, a 4-bedroom house. A chef, a personal chef, and some other things.
Oh, a personal chef. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Like the way that I read the tweet, I'm like, because he ended up getting like 200 or 300,000 at West Virginia, and LOL. Like we've all seen that offensive coordinator disaster when he was at USC. I mean, I think you and I were certainly scratching our heads. We're like, oh, you're gonna go see who's the offensive coordinator? Graham Harrell. Like,
yeah,
good luck with that. Like we've seen that program. But my first thought was like, dude, a house in Corvallis costs like $60,000. They couldn't get him a house.
Right. Well, I mean, it does feel like, you know, and I get it. Like the Beavs may not have had the NIL scratch to get that put together, to go out and compete. But like it is one that it feels like with where they are defensively in particular, and they maybe need a wide receiver or two out there. I hope that they can go out and at least land somebody competent and interesting. I mean, it is tough because I do think to be like there's sort of the balance there. Like if you're a player entering the transfer portal, how do you balance out like what is your immediate economic opportunity versus like the opportunity to feature and maybe go on to the NFL? And I feel like a really good quarterback could feature in Jonathan Smith's offense and then go to the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this was likely good news for Smith, right? Because like you can point to, hey, like we lost our starting quarterback. And I just started like, you know, I think he's like a third year freshman or whatever. Like the COVID year throws everything off. But look, we were able to have the same production. Look at the growth. Like I think Gold Branson got better over time. You've seen the production at the offensive side, like in how their quarterbacks have progressed. And look what JT Daniels did. Like he chased the money and maybe that's as good as he's going to get. So you might as well get the money while you got it, but he's transferring out of West Virginia again, right? I think it'll be his like fourth school in 4 years or whatever. If he would have gone to, who knows, like I would have loved to see him at Oregon State under Smith, like, and just seeing if he could have actually grown a draft stock that way, because I think he could. Like there's a world where he goes to Oregon State and he's really good. And he has that pedigree, came from USC, and now he's set up to make a lot more than $200,000 in shrimp cocktail, you know, which is probably what he got at West Virginia. It was a baffling decision. I'm sure money, like clearly money played into that because I just thought Harrell was a bad offensive coordinator, and West Virginia isn't like an offensive powerhouse anyway in terms of their recruiting. And he went there, and I think you're going to see bad decisions like this, and you're going to see good decisions. And I'm wondering if New England was able to bring in good players just because they weren't a dumpster fire in terms of their leadership. Like, right. I'm wondering if Oregon State won't have to spend the extra $100,000 to get somebody into their offense because they have the track record. I hope, maybe I'm Pollyannish about it, but it would be nice if that was the case.
Yeah, no, I think that that's right. I mean, like, I'm hopeful that people start to balance, that there is some balance of, like, that you see less of, like, the Spencer Rattler go to South Carolina and just take a lot of sacks for most of the year, right?
Yeah.
Like, I hope you got paid a tremendous amount of money, Spencer, to go suffer through that. Because, like, I mean, like, you are going to have schools that are willing to pony up the most money in the short run. But I don't think it's going to do you much good in the long run to have a bunch of bad tape and a bad offense.
Yeah. On the flip side, Ladarius Henderson, who was a really good offensive lineman at Arizona State, ended up transferring to Michigan. And this
he started playing when he was 17.
Like, and yeah. Well, didn't they? And then they redshirted him the next year, right? Because they're like, oh, this guy is the truth. Like, we're going to let him grow a little bit. Like, that's amazing. I think this is the first real, in your face, oh no, this conference could be in trouble, because Henderson got paid at Michigan, and God bless him, like, good for you. Michigan is a better program. There's a coaching change at ASU. I get all of that stuff, but this is kind of that first warning sign of, oh no, the Pac-12 doesn't have its act together from a financial standpoint. And there is a risk that this conference becomes the Mountain West in terms of, like, I mean, not as bad as the Mountain West, but bigger programs like Michigan are just going to be like, oh, Arizona, you have a great wide receiver. Like, we're going to take that one. Oh, hey, Oregon State, Washington State, like, we really like your left tackle. And they just start plucking up some of the talent from the lesser programs that don't have their NIL act together. And frankly, a conference that doesn't have the money to really compete against the Big Ten. Am I panicking, or I just saw this as the first sign of a possible trend?
I mean, I think I would say for right now, your likely answer is that schools like, say, Michigan, you know, I mean, like, they're going to go out, like, they're going to be able to go out and grab players, but they'll also probably be able to grab players from, like, lower level Big Ten schools. In the current NIL environment, which is a bit of a wild west as far as, like, regulation on what players can receive, that kind of thing, like, I think where the Pac-12, like, so in this sense, like, schools like Oregon or Washington or, Utah, if they, you know, really get invested in NIL, there is the potential for them to be okay. They're likely not going to be able to compete resource-wise overall with, like, an Ohio State or a Michigan or something like that, right? Like, even Oregon unless Phil Knight got involved, doesn't have the kind of donor resources outside of Phil Knight that, say, Ohio State does or something like that. That said, you can end up in a situation where, like, if NIL goes away because you end up in collective bargaining, then you could end up at a spot where, like, the huge TV money that the Big Ten is bringing in and the SEC is bringing in relative to the other conferences, like, they could just pay more for players. So, like, I think right now, like, the Pac-12 is not, like, they are going to be at a disadvantage. I don't know if they're a massive disadvantage, relatively speaking. Where I think you could really see trouble, too, for the Pac-12, though, is, like, also on coaching. I mean, like, we saw this, you know, with Mel Tucker. You know, Michigan State just dumped a bunch of money on Mel Tucker, paid his buyout of Colorado, and got him, you know. That's where I think the concern might be if you're, I mean, like, as well as, like, are you gonna be able to keep coach? Like, if Kalen DeBoer, let's say, like, you know, a year from now, you know, 2 years from now, like, if Washington really wants to keep him, can they, if, like, you know, like, Penn State opened up? I don't know that they can.
Well, we'll keep a look at. I mean, like, one of the other transfer notes to keep in mind was an inter-conference transfer. So, one of the linebackers, and it's funny because, like, you know, I watched a lot of Stanford football, And I'm, you know, like, we know there are good players on Stanford, like Caillou Blue Kelly. It's just the team in general sucks. So it's like, so when I was like, oh, whatever, like a Stanford transfer, like went from Stanford to Utah, you know, been there before. And then I'm like, oh no, it's like one of their better.
it does feel sometimes too, like, man, somebody's got to put up 20 points for the Knicks, right? Like every night, like yeah. there's you're going to have bad players, like decent players on bad teams.
That's what, like, one of the reasons we stopped like counting tackles. I mean, like, we still count them, but like, you know, or at least I put less, you know, less into how many tackles you have. Is like, it depends on the system. How are they funneling players? And are you making these tackles like 5 or 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage, yeah, on run plays? Yeah. But Lavani Dumani, who is one of the better, or at least like on paper, one of the better linebackers for Stanford, is transferring to Utah. And here we go again. Like, this is just what Utah does. They're like, oh, let's look around at some people that, you know, might be a little bit better if they were better served with coaching. So yet again, Utah brings in another transfer. You know, who knows? Because sometimes these go well, sometimes they don't. I think they got Minke Juarez from UCLA, you know, and he didn't pan out. So like, there are players that they get that don't work. But overall, that track record of that program is the reason they're competing for Pac-12 championships. And here's another possibility. So something to keep in mind there. Any other transfers to note? Those were really the three big ones that popped up on my radar.
Yeah, I mean, there's some guys that have entered their name in the portal that are kind of big, like Dorian Singer from Arizona. But nobody's, you know, those guys haven't signed anywhere else yet. So keep an eye out. You know, like, some of the guys are going to enter the portal as a way to get more money out of their current NIL deal at their current school, and they're going to come back. Some guys are going to, you know, leverage it and you know, go look for bigger opportunities elsewhere.
Okay. All right. We're going to do it now. We're going to talk Coach Prime, and we're going to do it right after this. All right, we're back. It's time. It's time for Coach Prime coming out of the woodwork to Colorado. I wasn't going to believe this till I saw it, because, and I think I have many thoughts, Rob, about this. So how about you start, and we'll see where this goes.
I want to start with that. Jackson State's actually a pretty good FCS team. You know, they're number 13 overall in the FCS beta rank. They're at 32 on offense, so like not as good of an offense, but they were at number 2 in FCS defenses. And when they got an opportunity to play, you know, outside of the HBCUs, like, they put a whooping on Campbell, which is a decent FCS squad. I generally think this is a good move for Colorado. I just don't think for them. Like, I think it was worth it to go make a splash and try to make some noise, you know, and like, you know, and just overall. I mean, and we can get into, because like, I think they've announced both of his coordinators today, or at least they've leaked out. I think there's some real, like, I think there's some real positives for Colorado in a school that has increasingly become like, it feels like a no man's land on recruiting.
I think, on the surface, and if you're Colorado, I think this is clearly a big step and a good step, and it's worth the risk, right? Like, and if he doesn't pan out, he's still going to bring talent into the program. So if he's a bad coach, and if for some reason the coordinators fall through, and it's kind of a disaster, he leaves and there's still going to be players there that are going to be significantly better than the players that have been at that program for a number of years. So I think that in itself brings a tremendous amount of value. On top of that, the attention and the focus and putting Colorado on the map is also worth that, the investment that they're making. I think they're paying them like 5.5 or 6 or something like that, million a year. There's a reason. I mean, he comes with the attention, and that's a good thing, I think, for Colorado. So all that is I think that's great. And I'm excited that he's in the conference. I do think that there's significant downside. There could be, at least. And I want to talk with you about the coordinators, but let's just put them in a vacuum for a moment, because one of the ways that Prime was able to build up Jackson State was to pull players that were kind of like, it's like the Island of Misfit Toys. He was able to get a lot of players that didn't get into like a Division I program or had been to a Division I program, weren't good enough, and he got them to play in a league where they were significantly better than everybody else.
Right.
So I just like, and I'm glad that you brought up Campbell, because I want to dive more into where are the games where he was playing actual teams that had the same level of talent that he had, because it strikes me, my idea of this is like Jackson State is it's the grown up that's playing flag football and stiff arming the kids, just in terms of the talent that he was able to bring and how much better they were in the conference that he was in. I think this, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I mean, it's a real bummer that we don't get to see, like, I mean, because the HBCUs within within the FCS, their champions do not participate in the FCS playoff. They have their own playoff. And so it's a real bummer that we didn't get to see Jackson State go into the FCS playoff. Because I think that they were good enough. They're not good enough to go out there and win a national title. But like, one of the things we would learn a lot more about where they currently sit, because like, they don't, like, they, to your point, like, their schedule was not great. Like, if you look across, like, where their schedule would rank, it was at number 85 overall. And there are other teams, like Incarnate Word, who's a terrific FCS program. Like, they play in a really bad conference, too. So, yeah. Like, you know, there are schools that we think are really good that also don't play, like, the toughest schedule in the world. I think what's interesting is, like, largely their defense has been, like, their offense is the one that, like, can really put it to people, but their defense, can put up, like, what looks like, when they're putting up cartoonish numbers, it's usually because they're playing somebody completely outclassed. But their defense was really good over the season. They held Campbell to 14, they had a lot of games where they were, pitching teams like some pretty, and limiting teams that, like, but I, to your point, that I think is worthwhile and sort of explore. It's sort of like if you're a really good recruiter at the junior college level and you could just get guys that just miss getting into like FBS programs, like, you can make some hay with that. And I think Deion did. Down there. And I, it's not that I don't think that he's, I mean, I absolutely think that he's going to be able to. In Colorado, they had pretty strict transfer requirements. They're loosening those up. And I'm sure that was part of his requirements for taking the job.
Yeah.
But it's going to, I think it's still going to be I agree with you. Like, we shouldn't expect him to suddenly come in and like radically change. Like, this isn't Lincoln Riley coming in at USC. Like, he's not taking over a roster that has some talented players, and has a huge fan base that's engaged and has a bunch of boosters that are extremely engaged, and a huge NIL program potentially behind him. Like, this is not that. Like, this will be a big step forward from where Colorado was. But I think it's going to be, it's not going to be like an automatic, like, oh man, they're going to, compete for the Pac-12 South and win 10 games, or there's no Pac-12 South anymore, but they're going to compete within the Pac-12 and win 10 games. Like, I think we're probably, that kind of a build is a lot longer than it was for him at Jackson State.
The two other things, and again, I am so excited that he's in the conference. So if you're a Colorado fan, like, please remember that. But like with every coach, every new hire, like, a lot of them flame out. A lot of them like don't end up working out. There are two things that really worry me. The first is the best offer he got was from Colorado and South Florida. That's a little worrisome. I feel like I think there were programs that were sniffing around for a while. And I was just shocked that he ended up taking Colorado. I assumed he would take a better job. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is the way that he's handling himself already in terms of, like, basically telling people to get the heck out of the, like on camera, like, basically, you better transfer now. I thought that speech was weird. And
yeah,
with all the attention that he's getting, like, he better, and maybe he does, and you know, he's a smart guy. I'm hoping he has an awesome chief of staff, because he is spending what seems like a lot of time just on image. And you got a coach at the end of the day. Like, you have to be able to get your coordinators on board. You have to run a program. Like, so I'm hoping that he, like, is the front facing, you know, guy, and he's able to really keep the administration, because at the end of the day, you can have as much attention as you want, but if you're not taking care of the fundamentals of a program, it's like any company, right? Like, you can have a great spokesman, but you got to have good operators for the company to succeed. And I'm hoping that's the case. I that just worries me a little bit, because he's having these players sign whether they want to be on, like, you know, hey, sign here so you can be on camera. You know, it just, like, that just strikes me as a lot of distraction for, it's a football program at the end of the day, and you got to win on the field. It's early, it's the first week, but like, it just, I just struck me as a little too much. And if it continues to go this way, it could be a distraction. What do you think about those two possible hangups?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, like, I mean, you can tell that, like, one of the things I think is interesting is you can always kind of tell people that, like, I don't know much about leadership, because, like, there are a lot of people that reacted to that speech, and they're like, oh, that's just what you have to do. You have to tell people like it is. Like, that's what you do when you're starting from scratch. But, like, look, like, John Wooden and Bobby Knight both have national titles, right? Like, you can win very differently. There's leadership, and, like, jerks can also be successful too. I mean, like, people should, like, you know, there's, like, I think people tend to put it as, like, oh, there's only one way to succeed, and there's not. Like, there are multiple avenues to success, right? Here's the thing, and college football is a bit different, that in that, like, it is very zero sum. I mean, sports are very, very zero sum. But I would also say, like, the private sector is also very zero sum. Like, if you produce, people will put up with a lot. But, like, you don't have to do it that way, right? Like, you can still win and not do it that way. And I think what will be interesting for him is if he, because he's publicly doing all of this stuff, I mean, like, he's going to probably have to win more to overcome the noise, right? Because he's going to turn people off. As he's already turning something, I mean, like, but this, and I think it was interesting to see some reporters that had covered Jackson State and some HBCUs, or covered him when he was coaching high school. Like, he has been doing this a long time. Like, he often won't talk to reporters. He only manages out his own, you know, like, the video that goes out on his own YouTube channel and his own, you know, video production team. He's a different animal in that sense. So, like, there's, like, I mean, you know, Colorado's not going to be, like, doing away with him, like, you know, answering questions after the game or something like that. But this is, you know, there's going to be, he was still, I think, a relatively small, I mean, a big fish in what in the HBCU world is, like, a very, very small pond with very, very little national attention, right? I mean, he had a lot of national attention, but, like he had a lot of national attention for what HBCUs normally get, you know?
Yeah.
This is going to be totally different. Like, he's, like, if he does something stupid, it is going to be talked about nationally in college football. And that's going to be, I think that's going to be interesting, because, like, he does seem, I don't think he's had the moments yet where he's really been caught out doing something really dumb yet, where it rose to the level where everyone would suddenly be paying attention to it. And I'm not sure he's got the filter to stop it.
Yeah.
And that's, like, but that's what I was, like, you know, like, people put up with Bobby Knight until they didn't, you know? And it's like, you don't have to be like I said, like, John Wooden won a bunch of games and a bunch of national titles, not being a maniacal jerk. And I'm not saying Dion is, right? Like, I don't think we've seen enough to say that. But, like, I thought, like, I manage people. I've had to fire people. It sucks. It's so fun. Like, and managing people out is, you know, or firing them is the same as managing a kid out in a football program, right? that's just not how you do it, right? Like, you have those conversations in private.
Yeah.
You let people have their dignity and treat them with class, you know? And like, I thought that was a little bit of a surprise. Like, it felt like a speech for the cameras rather than the kids.
It struck me as, this is all about me and about what I'm going to bring. And I'm like, right, those kids like signed, I don't know if they signed the waiver for that speech, but like, I'm sure they weren't expecting that. And when you do that in person, and I mean, because it's kind of humiliating, right? Like, that team sucked last year. I get it. I think they get it. And right. I just,
like, they know that, they're aware.
Yeah. I just like, I don't know. We used to do a podcast for Arizona basketball, and we got into trouble when like Sean Miller was just a straight like a-hole. And people are like, well, you know what, you know, you gotta have a, you know, he's an adult. They should be treated like adults. I'm like, yeah, I still don't treat adults like that.
And Miller treated the local media like garbage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, guys that have been covering the game, you know, Arizona basketball since Lute Olson was there.
Yeah.
You know,
and some of that's like, I think the difference particularly there and what I'm curious about at Colorado, it's like, I would almost use Kevin Sumlin at Arizona, or Kevin Sumlin wasn't talking to the media. And it's like, dude, it's the local hometown paper and it's your first year. They're not going to like light you on fire. You know, this is your first year. Like, they literally just want to know, hey, like, how's practice going? You know? And I'm curious to see how that pans out. Just, and like, I try not to use Arizona as much because, you know, we cover the whole conference, but when you've seen something like the way that things have been mishandled at your school, and then you see a possibility that elsewhere, it just raises some flags. But with that said, like, super excited. Hopefully that portion doesn't rear its head again, because I thought it was pretty, but like, I just didn't like it. But who is he hired as his coordinator? Seems like he's making some good decisions on that front.
So there's, I mean, I gotta keep, like, we do know that Sean Lewis is coming, the head coach of Kent State, who runs an interesting offense. Like, now they're not, I think people, I want to call out, I don't think Kent State's offense is as good as some people do. So, like, they're not some like exceptional group of five offense under Lewis. Now they do speed it up considerably, and they run a lot of plays. And I think that's interesting. Like, and he has, Deion has indicated that he really wants, to push, you know, push the envelope, push how fast they're going, which take advantage of the altitude. But like, Kent State, for the most part under Lewis, has been has mostly hovered in the 70s offensively. And the one year where they got below that was, you know, number 37 in beta rank offense. Like, that was number 20. That was in 2020, which is like COVID year weirdness, right? Like, the MAC barely played any games. I just like, and that's a decent group of five offense, but you have like the really good group of five offenses, like, get up in the 50 or above range, right? So like, he's not hiring like an ace OC, like, but he is getting somebody that I do think will be pretty good and should be a huge improvement over what they've been doing the last couple of seasons.
Do we get any word on the defensive side?
There's two names out there, one of which is Mike Zimmer, the former Viking coach.
Oh.
So this one,
I've just been down one, this road so a couple times.
One, yeah. I looked this up. So this one was kicked out there by Larry Fitzgerald Sr. Is that a real person? I don't know. Like, it started getting some push from it. Brian Howell, who's the beat reporter for the Denver Post, has said that's not happening. The name that I saw today was Alabama's. He's not their play caller. Pete Golding is their play caller on defense. And I gotta look up who it is. I don't know if I'm gonna find it in time for this. But he's their associate defensive, like, he's a co-defensive coordinator, even though he's not calling plays.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I mean, like, I actually think, like, their defense was really good at Jackson State, so if he was able to bring along a lot of the defensive staff, I think that would be a good one. I mean, there are some names for the staff, like Tim Brewster is coming on to coach tight ends, like, and he was with Dion at Jackson State, and a good recruiter, you know, like, Brewster has been, you know, a well-regarded recruiter for a while around college football. Certainly an improvement, you know, like, over the guys they had on the prior staff, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Not like the blowout names on the defensive side that I was expecting, but I think the other thing is I saw that Willie Taggart's coming. Well, good luck with that. You know,
that's an odd one. Like, Willie Taggart is like position coach. Cause like, he's not going to be calling plays. He's not going to, I mean, and maybe that's how far Willie Taggart has fallen.
Man, like, it has been a mess. Like, just wherever he's gone recently has been, and Oregon fans are like laughing and chuckling along as we're saying this, but man, it has been a precipitous decline for him. So I'm curious to see what position. No, but that doesn't mean that.
I think it's Charles Kelly is who they're talking about. He's the associate defensive coordinator in Alabama.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Any other hires or anything else he's picked up that's of interest?
I mean, of course, like you said, like, you know, his son's coming to play quarterback, and he was the quarterback at Jackson State. You know, the former five-star wide receiver said he's going to come to Colorado as well. I mean, I'm interested to just see how, like, again, like, when they're enrolled, we'll talk about it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure his son will end up there, but.
Yeah, the other thing that look, the quarterbacks were garbage at Colorado, so maybe that's why I said it. But like, that was the other thing that just struck the wrong chord, was like, my son's quarterback, y'all. Like, you know, just geez, man. Like, you just got here, you know. Like, I think I get it, but that might tamp a little bit on who's, you know, like, who you can recruit now. If you're just saying, look, and I wouldn't. Signed up to be quarterback at Colorado if like, the coach's son was like for sure being like, I don't know, there's just a couple things that just got real, I just unseemly, I thought was, or just a different not the greatest way, not the kindest greatest way to handle things right off the bat. So but I still think he's gonna bring a lot of energy and attention, and I think the program will get better. So that's exciting to see. Just Colorado is interesting now, and that's great. What are there? We don't have any Stanford hires yet.
We got the Oregon offensive coordinator hire.
Oh, who'd they go with? I missed that.
So they got the offensive coordinator for UTSA. I want to talk about, you know, like what I was just saying about, like, hey, a really good group of five offenses are often better than what we're seeing here. Like, that's what I'm trying to get at, is like, the UTSA. They were number 28 offensively this season. They were 26 the year before. So Will Stein is coming in to be the OC at Oregon. I think this is a really good hire. Like, I'm excited for him to come in. I'm not sure he's going to be – I mean, he may not live up to being exactly Dillingham, but he's really, really good. He runs really good, interesting stuff. You know, like, should be a fun hire for Oregon.
Well, that's good. What is he known for? Have you done the deep dive into him yet?
There were some interesting hires. I mean, like, Cal made a hire at OC too. but here, let me pull up UTSA's run pass split. And they have a good group of five quarterback in Frank Harris, who's coming back. They were at number 19 in effective pass, 51 in effective rush this past season. So they're gonna look to throw it around a little bit. They should be, like I said, like, they should be a really fun offense. Like, I'm excited for this one. They were pretty explosive, 29 overall in explosive drives, and they were a real offense first team.
Well, that's good. What did we get at Cal?
Jake Spadaball, who was last the head coach at Texas State, and it didn't work. He was the prior to that, he was the offensive coordinator at Texas A&M. He's been at Texas State a while, and they never made a change because it was often thought they just didn't have the money to buy him out, and they just sort of let him go. And Texas State is sort of like the program time forgot or money forgot in a lot of ways within college football. Spadaball also coached at Cal under Sonny Dykes, kind of an air raid guy. there's some hope, I think, that this, I mean, this is, the, I mean, and when Spadamon was let go by Texas State, I said, well, somebody has an opportunity. He, you know, it's years ago, but he was a pretty good Power Five offensive coordinator. Somebody has a shot to go, you know, and he has a shot to go, you know, sort of like regain his mojo, call and play somewhere. Turns out it's at Cal. I would expect it's been a while since he called plays, so mileage may vary, but this does feel like a, I'm more sanguine about this being successful than I was the Bill Musgrave hire, for sure. Although I also feel like at this point, like Justin Wilcox, like fool me once, fool me twice. I want to see it. I do think it's interesting because I think like there is some misconception. Like people still seem to think Cal has a good defense. They didn't this year. You know, so like this isn't like instant, like, turn around the program type thing. It'll be a big help, but like Cal has some sneaking cracks coming into the defense. They were not a good overall defense this season at all.
That program is on the rocks. I'm glad that they, you know, let's see. I do think it might speak to the fact that of the pool that Wilcox is fishing in, where he's got to bring somebody that hasn't called plays in a while, right? Rather than like a hot young coordinator or somebody that has a more of a track record recently. So, and look, I think if you've had a program that is on the decline, you've been down this road before where you go, oh, that's a creative hire. And sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't. So, but I do think that kind of like speaks a little bit to where Cal is in terms of the talent he's able to accrue there. On his staff, because for a while, like when he was first starting, it was kind of a fun staff. You're like, oh wow, this is pretty good. And over time, that staff is changed, and the program is different. So, okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that. I mean, if they actually do open it up rather than do this garbage offense they've had in the last couple of years, and to be frank, like to be very fair on my front, I thought Bo Baldwin was going to knock it out of the park. I thought he was a great hire. I mean, I wanted him to be the head coach at Arizona if Kevin Sumlin, like that's probably my two worst takes ever in the Pac-12 was like, I hope Bo Baldwin is the coach if we don't get Kevin Sumlin. Like looking back at that, holy smokes, totally off on those. But so we'll have to see what he's able to do.
I mean, you mean current Arizona State offensive coordinator Bo Baldwin?
Oh, that's right. Oh, no. Yeah. Now you talk about worrisome. That is worrisome.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, it's still like, look, Kenny Dillingham has said he's not going to call plays. He is all like, you should sit there. Like, I feel like we should be, you feel like, look, if it's not working, Dillingham can just step in and call plays. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Bo, I was shocked. I had to be like, is there another Bo Baldwin that I don't know of? Is that Bo Baldwin?
Yeah, he hasn't exactly been
lighting it up at the FCS level.
Where was he? Like Cal Poly?
Yeah. Yeah. And then
that's bad. That's like, yeah. I'm sorry. Like that's look, and you're right. Dillingham like clearly was exceptional at Oregon. So outside of some of the cute creative stuff, we already covered that. But ASU, like you mentioned, a lot of people just only watch their teams. Cal sucked with Bo Baldwin as the like play caller. And he had multiple years, right? Like he wasn't just fired after one. He was bad for like 3 years there.
I thought it was interesting too, because like it's not just that he sucked. His offensive coordinator got hired at Utah, Troy Taylor, and sucked. that whole scheme they were running sucked. Now they're going to run Dillingham's scheme, you know, and his playbook and you know, here. So I would be a little less worried. The good hire that I thought they made was Brian Ward. They got Washington State's defensive coordinator to come in.
Oh, man. So I've been like, traveling really for the hire. I've been traveling like the last week. So like I missed some, this is like a whole new world.
It's been like I have a stupid offsite next week, and like there is going to be like there's just like way too much preparation for this right now. So like I feel you. I'm like I'm barely keeping track of like what's going on.
Well, like that's an interesting hire, right? Like, I mean, obviously Dickert, likely the mastermind there, And I've just been so impressed by that program and what he's been able to do with, like, particularly with the talent, right? I mean, it's not like Washington State has four or five star bangers, and their defense is quite good. And you bring somebody that's in that vein over to ASU, who on paper should be able to have more NIL money, should be able to bring in better talent. They have like, you know, Arizona is just booming right now. They're going to have some players to bring in from some of those high schools. That's interesting to me. I mean, we'll see, right? Like, did he call plays for sure at Washington State?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And I like the hire. I mean, I do. Like, there's like, I swear to God, like, there's a level of fan that I've just had it with. And it's the fan that, like, doesn't like football enough to, like, find interest. Like, if their rival does something that good, that's pretty obviously good in a football sense, like, they can't acknowledge it. And so, like, there's the Washington fans that are a bit like this. They'll be like, oh, we would stone Leach's offense. And I'm like, you guys have a really good defense. And, like, he doesn't have the players, right? Like, clearly, you know, like, or in this case, like, Washington lit up Washington State's defense. Washington's got a fantastic offense. Like, Washington State, it is so hard to put together a good defense there. And also, people, like, do not ever quote per game stats to me. Like, I will not take you seriously as a person. If you, like, I will not respect you or take you seriously if you're like, here's how many yards per game or points per game or something. Like, at least give me, like, points per drive. Truly, like, Washington State, like, yeah, they had some games they gave up a lot of points and yards, but, like, the Pac-12 had some really good offenses this year, and I think they played almost all of them.
No, that is an interesting hire. Like,
that's a good one.
I would love to see how that works out over time. I hope he succeeds. It's been really fun to see a defense, like, and it's funny because it kind of went back to the Grinch, you know, years. Like, there were some nasty defenses at Washington State. He leaves and they brought in Clancy,
Pendergast.
Tracy Clays. Yeah. Which
Clancy, Tracy.
Yeah. Well, look, minus the off or kind of on the field stuff, but I thought that was an interesting hire at least, and it didn't work out, I guess what I'm saying is, like, there have been a number of creative hires on the defensive front at Washington State, and, like, Rolovich bringing over Dicker. We were like, oh, that's interesting. The guy from Wyoming, I like that. And that's what you need to do to stay competitive. And Washington State has done that. And it's spreading to the conference. That's great. Like, I'm curious to see, has Washington State filled that void yet?
Not yet.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep a lookout for that. That's good. Good. Like, it's nice to see good talent, like, kind of spread out through the conference. This is good. I'm excited about this. Any other hires we should cover here before we get out today, Rob?
No. I mean, truthfully, like, if you're at ASU or Cal or Colorado, like, there are some pretty good. I mean, with Ward and Spadaval and Lewis, like, those are all pretty good improvements. You should be, you know, and that's, I think, good for the conference. I'm just, like, I'm shocked, like, UCLA, like, I mean, I think what's interesting is, you know, we're past Black Sunday, right? Like, where a lot of coaches get fired.
Yeah.
And the days, and I mean, maybe something to keep an eye on here is, like, what we usually saw, which is, like, wait till after the initial signing day to see if guys get fired. Because that used to be, like, a lot of assistant coaches and position coaches would get fired after signing day so that the guys that they were recruiting wouldn't leave. So maybe there may be a second wave of firings coming. But it's interesting because if you look at, like, the parts of the conference, like, where you feel like there were obvious issues, mostly at defensive play callers, but, like, UCLA, you know, I don't think Bill McGovern worked out terribly well. You know, like, there could be some other openings that come up along the way, I think, here.
Okay. Well, we'll keep a lookout for that. And there's going to be lots of hires that are going to move throughout the conference, and they will impact your school, like, from the position coaches to the coordinators, obviously, to the head coach too. So we'll look out for that. We'll look out for the Stanford coaching opening here. And anything else to plug, Rob, before we get out of here?
No, I don't even. I was planning on trying to get, like, a Saturday six out for, like, the FCS playoffs this weekend, and I'm just not going to have the time. So I will try to get one I get back from my like bananas offsite in New York on like Thursday. So I'll try to get one put together like sometime next weekend for like previewing the playoff and some of the bigger bowl games.
Is the model still rolling on the FCS side?
Yeah, it's doing pretty well. I mean, like the FCS is interesting though, because you just have like, I mean, in FBS football, you have at least, I mean, like for a conference like the Pac-12, you're getting like for most teams, you're getting at least two non-conference games that count against FBS opponents. And then for like a lot of teams are getting three, you know, across college football, like FCS, like you might get one, you know, maybe two. And so that is like the play, like we'll probably have to carry in some of the distribution for like how the conferences grade out from this season into next season. So you understand it. So like, but it's done largely well. It was, I mean, it was all chalk last week for the FCS playoffs. Like all the higher seeds won. The teams that had buys. This week, it does like Incarnate Word a little bit more than Sacramento State and it likes William and Mary. So we'll see if that holds up.
Bill and Mary. Let's go. Let's go. Yeah. all right, man. That and Bobby Moe. Those are my two favorite like nicknames, Bill and Mary and Bobby Moe for Robert Morris. All right. Stick with us. We'll catch you everybody next week. We got bowl games. We got coaching vacancies. And thanks for sticking with us. Take care.